be interviewed so he would have an interesting story to tell his buddies over beers. "You know Matt and Amy?" Jack ventured.
"A little."
"They members out here?"
"Sure, all the Doyles are."
"Matt play golf?"
"Not much. He would occasionally come out with Chris."
"They get along?"
"As far as I could tell."
Jack leaned against the counter and picked up a Vote for Joe button from the box on the counter.
"Can I have this?"
"Take the box. I'll have to trash them tomorrow."
"Thanks."
Jack made a show of pinning the button to his coat.
"Is there a bathroom?"
"Yeah. Locker room is down the hall on the right."
"Thanks."
Jack went down the hall, peeked into the locker room, and kept going. The next door was a cleaning closet, but the next one was what he was looking for. He opened the door to Chris's office and flipped on the light. A desk was wedged into a space only marginally bigger than the cleaning closet next door. A filing cabinet, a number of single golf clubs in various states of repair, and a couple of folded metal chairs took up the back wall. A dusty Dell desktop sat on the corner of the desk, looking like it hadn't been used in 5 years. No sofa. Jack flipped off the light and went back into the hall. He walked back to the 19th hole slowly, taking in the pictures and plaques on the walls. One name dominated the club championship plaques from the mid-1980s to the early 2000s. Jack stopped in front of a fairly recent picture of Joe Doyle, Chris, Matt, and an older man Jack didn't recognize.
"That's Big Jake."
Chris stood in the doorway of the 19th hole, holding a cup filled with tomato juice.
"Red beer," Chris explained.
"Want one?"
"No."
"Should I know who Big Jake is?"
"Jacob York?
Billy's dad."
Jack nodded and turned his attention back to the man in the picture. He was big, all right. He towered over Joe, Chris, and Matt. A large nose anchored a face covered in broken blood vessels. A cigar was stuck in the corner of his mouth, but couldn't hide his smirk of self-satisfaction. Jack saw where Ellie got her height, but nothing else about this man reminded him of her.
"He spent a lot of time out here."
"He called it his office."
"I suppose for a gambler like him, a country club is a good place to spend your time."
Chris sipped his drink and stared at Jack over the rim.
"What can I do for you, Jack?"
"I'm here to talk about Matt and Amy."
"You are?
Why are you surprised?"
"I assumed y'all weren't interested in what I had to say since you didn't come see me yesterday."
"Lots of interviews to get through."
"And I'm at the bottom of the list. Come on, ride a few holes with me."
Chris didn't wait for Jack to answer. He was out of the bar, through the door, and outside in 5 long strides, in his golf cart in 10. Jack sat in the passenger side. Chris punched the gas pedal and the golf cart jumped to life. Jack grabbed the roof of the cart with his free hand.
"You play golf?" Chris asked.
"Some."
"You should come play with me. 5 a hole usually, but I can go richer or poorer, whatever you want."
"Probably shouldn't be gambling as chief of police."
"I won't tell."
Chris was out of the cart before it completely stopped at the 10th tee. He pulled a driver out of his bag, teed his ball up, took 2 practice swings, and hit the ball straight down the middle of the fairway.
"Nice shot," Jack said.
Chris put a stuffed bear head cover over his driver and shoved the club into his bag.
"Thanks."
He punched the gas and the golf cart lurched again.
"What do you want to know?"
"Why are you playing golf when your brother and sister-in-law have barely been dead 48 hours?
Chris checked the GPS for distance and stopped the cart by his ball.
205. Slight headwind. Looks like a 4 to me.
Jack waited while he hit a solid shot. It landed on the left edge of the green with a right pin placement. They drove to the green.
"I guess it does seem cold, me golfing after my family's been murdered. It isn't because I didn't like Matt and Amy or because I'm not sad. They were the only two people in this whole damn family with a bit of decency. Chris got his putter, two-putted for birdie, and returned. He drove the cart to the 11th tee, stopped at the tee box, and picked up his cup. He sat back and stared at the river to their left.
"Peaceful, isn't it?" Chris said.
"It is. Nothing like what's going on at Joe's house."
"No.
Or mine, I imagine."
Chris spread his hands as if it explained everything.
"There's nothing I could do there. They've got all the bases covered."
"What do you mean?"
"My father-in-law is all blustery and indignant, threatening for heads to roll if the murder isn't solved yesterday. My mother-in-law is sedated. My wife is methodically taking care of everything but letting her father take the credit. There's nothing for me to do."
"Be a comfort to your family." He scoffed.
"Mary is the only one who needs comfort, and she's got Prozac for that. She'll probably be drugged up for a year. She is most of the time as it is."
"What about Matt and Amy's children?"
"Being taken care of by Amy's mom, no doubt. She'll probably push for custody, which will be granted because Mary can't take care of them and Michelle won't want them. Joe will probably put up a fight because it's expected, but he doesn't want the hassle either."
"You aren't painting your family in a very rosy light."
"It's not a rosy family. I have no doubt Michelle and Joe are livid. But grieving? Not in the typical way."
For all of Chris's distance and apparent disinterest, he saw right through his family.
"You have any theories on who did it?"
"Nope.
I don't believe you."
Chris Ryan put his arm across the back of the seat and turned toward Jack.
"Who do you think did it?"
Jack smiled.
"Norman Davy."
Chris's eyes bulged, and he guffawed.
"Davy? You're shitting me, right?"
"Yes. He has a rock-solid alibi. About the only one close to Matt who does." Chris tossed his empty cup in the trash and pulled out his 3-iron. After he made the shot, straight down the fairway again, Jack said, "Tell me about Saturday night, Sunday morning after the bonfire."
"Michelle and I left together. I dropped her at her car and brought the smoker out here."
"What time did you get home?"
"I don't remember. Late. After 2, probably."
"Where were your kids?"
"Home, in bed. I checked on them before turning in."
"Asleep?"
"Yes. Or pretending to be. You know teenagers."
"And Michelle? Was she home when you got there?"
"I don't know. We don't share a bedroom. She snores like a locomotive."
"When did you see her next?"
"Sunday afternoon."
"You didn't talk to your wife until the afternoon. She didn't call or text you about Matt and Amy."
"She texted me, but there was nothing I could do."
"No one can confirm where you were from 12:30 until Sunday afternoon."
"I was here Sunday morning."
"Who did you see first and what time?"
"I honestly don't know. I took a shower in the locker room and got out on the course about 7.
"I'll need the names of your foursome."
"I played by myself."
"Not busy on Sunday morning?"
"Not particularly. It picks up after church."
"What was your relationship with Matt like?"
"We weren't close, but we didn't dislike each other."
"How about Matt and Michelle? They get along."
"No. Michelle resented Matt because he was Joe's favorite, and Matt thought Michelle was a raging bitch and a bully."
Finally, a family member willing to tell it like it is. "Then why did Matt come to work for DI?
"Joe promised him autonomy from Michelle."
"Did he get it?"
"He thought he did. My wife can be subtle when she wants to. They needed him to stick around and be happy, so she made sure he was."
"Why did they need Matt happy?" Chris's golf shoes clicked on the cart path. He leaned one arm on the roof of the cart.
You know, I have a pretty good life. Hell, I basically play golf for a living. For the privilege, I look the other way when my wife fucks other men, and I do exactly what Joe and Michelle tell me to do.
And they've told you to keep quiet. Chris's laugh was bitter.
I'm so insignificant, they haven't told me shit.
You know about Michelle's infidelities.
Everyone knows about my wife's infidelities.
And you don't care.
Like I said, I have a good life. I have my share of secrets.
He pulled his driver out of his bag, walked to the tee, and teed up his ball. Chris addressed the ball and wiggled his club. With a fluid motion, he sent the ball flying. A perfect draw.
Remind me never to play golf with you, Jack said.
Tell me about Paco Morales.
Chris covered his driver and pushed it in his bag roughly. Paco? Old bastard hasn't shown up for work in 5 days. If he wasn't the best groundsman I've ever had, I'd fire his ass.
When was the last day he was here?
Thursday, I think. Maybe Wednesday. I'll have to check the time cards.
Ever have any trouble with him?
No, none. Reliable. Great worker.
We've ID'd one of the bodies at the 107 fire as Paco's.
Oh, shit.
Chris rubbed his hand over his mouth. After a moment, he shrugged.
I guess I'm not shocked. He'd occasionally ask me to hire friends of his, pay them in cash. I know it's illegal, but I would. Only short term. I caught one of his friends living out in the groundskeeper's shed out by the 12th green. I tore into Paco. He stopped asking after that.
When did that happen?
A year ago?
No one recently, Jack said. Chris frowned, shook his head, and looked away.
Not here.
Did Michelle know Paco?
Sure, he did our yard, too. Are we about done here? I need to get home and get ready for visitation tonight.
Sure. They drove the length of a hole before Jack said, Do you own a gun?
No. Michelle made me get rid of them. She has one. She doesn't think I know about it.
How do you know about it?
I saw her hiding it in her dresser Sunday night.
Chapter 36. Ellie wondered how much longer she needed to continue with this farce. She looked at her watch. 11 in the morning. And if the lack of eye contact from the voters as they exited the rock gym was any indication, Doyle was going to win in a landslide. Ellie felt like a criminal standing before the bar, waiting for the jury to read out the sentence. Jane Maxwell and her sister Marta exited the gym. They at least made a beeline to her, heads high.
Don't look so downtrodden, Jane chastised. Voters who are on the fence as they go in will surely not be encouraged by your defeated expression.
Ellie plastered on a smile.
Better?
No. We knew it would be a long shot. You made people think, which will help you when you run for mayor to replace me.
Ellie laughed. I'm not running for mayor. This little endeavor has cured me of any desire to be in politics.
Nonsense.
Not for the first time, Ellie got the impression she was playing a part in a script written long ago by Jane Maxwell.
You look terrible, Jane said. Are you sick?
Don't spare my feelings, Jane.
Jane gave Ellie a look that said she was too old and time was too short to spare feelings.
It'll pass. How are you feeling?
I'm 92 years old.
It was apparently all the explanation Ellie was going to get. Jane glared at someone over Ellie's shoulder. She followed Jane's gaze.
Look smug all you want, Joe Doyle,
Jane said, voice low. Your days are numbered.
Joe and Michelle walked on either side of Mary Doyle, holding up her and her grief. Joe and Michelle looked appropriately subdued as the relatives of recently murdered family members, but Mary was the only one who looked truly wrecked at the loss. Joe smiled tightly and waved at voters, and Michelle kept her arm around her mother, but her eyes found Ellie. Grief couldn't mask the knowing smirk Michelle always threw Ellie's way. She knew Michelle's mind wasn't on her mother, her dead brother and sister-in-law, or the vote she was about to cast, but was on all the ways she had bested Ellie over the years. Ellie turned her back on her lifelong nemesis, only to see Jack McBride drive up and park across the street. Christ, she murmured. She closed her eyes, lifted her head, and inhaled deeply. When she exhaled and opened her eyes, Jane's ice-blue eyes met hers. Too much knowledge resided there. Ellie looked away, the opposite direction from where Jack came from. Jack stopped at their little group. Ladies? Ellie put a smile on her face and turned to face him. Chief?
How is the case going? Jane asked.
I expect to make an arrest today or tomorrow.
Ellie couldn't hide her surprise.
So soon?
Jack's eyes held hers, and he nodded.
Good job, Jane said. That'll be an important notch on your belt before Doyle gets on the council.
We'll see. Is he here?
Inside, voting, Ellie said.
It will,
Jane said, ignoring Jack's question and Ellie's response.
As long as I'm mayor, you'll have a job. Don't you worry about Doyle's threats. Bombastic rhetoric from a blowhard.
Done with Jack, she turned to Ellie.
Are the developers from Dallas coming today?
No, I rescheduled.
Why?
Because Matt was murdered. The Henry isn't going anywhere. They'll be here next week.
If we keep pushing them off, they might lose interest.
They won't lose interest.
Ellie rubbed her forehead. A headache was coming on.
It's under control, Jane.
You should go home,
Marta interjected.
I will come over with some soup. You will feel better soon.
Thank you, Marta, but I'll be fine. You two should get out of this cold. I'll call you later, Jane.
The two walked off slowly, leaving Ellie alone with Jack. Ellie kept her gaze fixed on the two elderly German women for as long as possible, to avoid looking at him. She felt a slight pressure on her elbow and turned to face him. Concern and pity were clear on his face.
Don't look at me like that.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not okay. I'm losing, badly.
I'm not talking about the election.
Ellie raised an eyebrow.
Julie told you about this morning.
Jack nodded.
Is there something you need to tell me?
Is there something you need to tell me?
Jack's expression morphed to puzzlement.
Julie could barely run today, she was so sore. Insatiable, I believe, is what she called you.
Jack shoved his hands in his pockets. He couldn't meet her gaze.
Christ.
Ellie swiped her fingers under her eyes to banish the unwanted tears.
I don't want to know. Here come the Doyles. I'm leaving. I have a business to run.
Jack stopped her with a hand on her arm. Ellie, we need to talk. She stared into his eyes, hating herself for crying, for showing any emotion at all, and wondered if this would be the last time she would be close enough to smell him, to see the golden flecks in his brown eyes.
I don't know that we do.
Chapter 37. Jack didn't have time to fully comprehend what Ellie said before she was walking off and the Doyles were walking up. Mary Doyle wore a vacant, drug-induced expression. Michelle tried to hide her revulsion, which Jack suspected was directed at her mother. Doyle's commanding voice shattered the crisp morning air into a thousand pieces.
"Do you have news, McBride?"
"I do." Jack turned to Michelle. "Could you come to the station?" For the first time since he'd known her, Michelle looked surprised.
"Me? Why do you need to talk to me?"
"Just a few questions. Clarifications."
"Ask them here," Doyle said.
Jack glanced at the steady stream of voters coming and going. The vote for Joe signs that outnumbered Ellie's 10-1. The campaign buttons seemingly on every voter's lapel. Jack had had the foresight to remove his before he got out of the car. "How many buttons did you buy?"
"What kind of question is that?"
5,000.
Mary Doyle's quiet voice broke in. Mary Doyle was one of those older women you see who are always perfectly put together, whose clothes somehow always looked like they just came from the cleaners. Her hair and makeup would always be perfectly in place, despite humidity, heat, wind, or cold, and she probably had never left her house without her lipstick on. Her perfume was faint but noticeable, and tasteful 1-carat diamond earrings were clipped on each lobe. She was a woman whose quietness either confirmed a timidity or masked a deep-seated strength. She met Jack's eyes steadily.
"I ordered them."
Jack smiled encouragingly at the grief-stricken woman. "Mrs. Doyle, I'm so sorry for your loss."
"Thank you, Chief McBride,"
she sniffed.
"Despite what Joe and Michelle say, I know you'll catch whoever did this."
"I will." Mary Doyle nodded and slumped back into her trance. "Michelle, are you ready?" Jack said.
"Yes."
"I'm coming with you," Doyle said.
"No, Dad. Take Mary home."
"I'll bring Davy."
"No need."
Michelle and Jack walked to his car. "You don't want a lawyer?"
"I have nothing to hide."
Jack opened the passenger side door of his personal car. He closed the door behind her and said, "I doubt that." "No, in here." Michelle stopped outside of Jack's office and glanced at the break room, which doubled as the interview room. She shrugged, entered, and sat down. Jack closed the door and sat across from her. He placed a manila folder on the table between them. Michelle pointedly didn't look at it. "First things first. You have the right to remain silent."
"What?"
"Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law."
"Are you arresting me?"
"You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford one, one will be appointed to you. If you give up this right..."
"You really don't want to keep your job, do you, McBride?"
"No need to worry. I Mirandize everyone. I had a problem with that in a case once. I told myself never again. Do you understand your rights as I've told them to you?"
"Yes."
"Good. Do you want a lawyer?"
"I don't need one."
"Do you know Paco Morales?"
"My lawn guy?"
Michelle said, nonplussed.
"What does this have to do with my brother?"
"Did he work for Matt?"
"Sure. Paco did Matt and Dad's yard, too."
Michelle leaned forward.
"I'm confused. Why are you asking me about Paco?"
Jack pulled a photo from his folder and slid it to Michelle. "One of these bodies was Paco." Michelle wrinkled her nose at the charred bodies and their melted faces. She turned her head away.
"I think I'm going to be sick."
Jack removed the metal trash can from beneath the sink and set it next to Michelle's chair. "In case you're being sincere."
"Of course I am."
She was pale. Jack sat down. "When was the last time you saw him?"
"I have no idea. Months, probably."
"But he did your yard weekly."
"It's November, in case you haven't noticed. They did the yard when we were at church.
Jack placed a picture of the scorched button in front of her. You don't remember giving him a vote for Joe button? She laughed and regained a bit of her color. She flipped over the picture of Paco's charred body.
McBride, I haven't handed out any of those stupid buttons. They were Mom and Dad's idea.
She focused on the second picture.
Why don't you cut to the chase and tell me what's going on?
We found this campaign button at the scene of the fire, with the bodies. It has your fingerprint on it.
Bullshit.
You haven't asked who the other victim was. Michelle crossed her arms and remained silent. Diego Vasquez. It was a small lie. Jack and Dan weren't sure who the second victim was and might not ever know, but all signs pointed to Diego Vasquez. There was a direct connection between him and Paco Morales through Esperanza Perez. Morales was known to harbor illegals, and Jack's gun had been the murder weapon. Vasquez was either victim or perpetrator, and making him the victim suited Jack's game at the moment. He was pleased to see his bluff hit the mark.
I don't know who that is,
she said, shifting a little in her chair. Everyone in Stillwater knows who Diego Vasquez is.
I know the name, but I've never met him.
How do you think it is that a known cartel assassin and your lawn guy end up murdered together?
I guess Paco sold drugs.
Could be. But how does a campaign pin with your print get there, too?
Chris probably gave them out to all of his workers.
But it wasn't your husband's print we found on it.
I'm not saying another word until my lawyer arrives.
Jack put the paper back in the manila folder, closed it, and leaned back in his chair. Suit yourself. He wondered if she would remember she told her father not to bring Davy. After a few minutes, he leaned forward. You want to call him?
Who?
Your lawyer? Her eyes widened slightly. She had forgotten. Jack slid his phone across to Michelle. Use mine, if you like. Michelle reached into her purse, pulled out her phone, and called Davy.
He's on his way,
she said when she hung up. She looked out the window. Jack flipped over the photo of the charred bodies and placed pictures of Matt and Amy's dead bodies on the table next to it. Unable to control her curiosity, Michelle glanced down. She gasped, and her face paled. Michelle swallowed a couple of times but couldn't overcome her disgust. She bent over the side of her chair and threw up in the trash can. She sat up and wiped her mouth.
Fucking asshole.
Michelle crossed her arms and clenched her jaw so hard a muscle pulsed near her ear. Logic would say Matt and Amy were payback, but I have evidence it's not. The break room door clattered open, and Joe Doyle barreled through, a flustered Norman Davy on his heels.
We're done here, Joe said.
We are, Jack agreed.
She can leave, Davy asked.
Jack nodded. She could have left 10 minutes ago. Michelle huffed in irritation and pushed herself away from the table, scraping the metal chair across the industrial tile floor. She walked out the door, pushing it against the wall with a bang. Doyle stepped right up next to Jack and said,
You're going to pay, McBride.
Yes, yes, I know. When you win, you're going to fire me. I've heard it before.
It's a promise.
Jack got in Doyle's face and said in a low, threatening voice,
Good luck doing that from jail, you son of a bitch.
Doyle's eyes widened slightly before his face turned a mottled red.
Come on, Joe,
Davy said, pulling on Doyle's arm. Doyle let his lawyer pull him out of the office. Once Doyle was on his way down the hall, Davy returned.
I told you yesterday everything goes through me. Nothing said here is admissible.
He caught sight of the photos and visibly recoiled.
Oh, Lord.
Jack held up the metal trash can. The tangy scent of Michelle's vomit almost sent Davy over the edge. Davy stepped back and waved the trash can away. Jack carried the trash can out of the break room but stopped in the doorway. You might want to get Michelle a lawyer with a stronger stomach. Miner watched the interrogation through the double-sided glass window in Jack's office. There was an arrogance in Michelle that showed itself in an eerie calm and directness Miner'd always thought off-putting. But would she kill someone in cold blood? If her nausea at the sight of the burned bodies and Matt and Amy was any indication, she wouldn't have the stomach for it, which was shocking. Michelle fostered the image of being a badass, tougher than anyone else. Miner bought most of it, but everyone had their weaknesses, and it seemed as though Gore might be Michelle's, which only meant she would order a hit, but she wouldn't do it herself. Jack entered the office. You get it on tape? Miner shut down the camera. Yep. What do you think? Jack went to his computer and opened his email program. You rattled her for sure. I guess your gun rules out Brian Grant as a suspect for Matt and Amy. It would seem so. I can't imagine a scenario where Brian would get my gun from Diego Vasquez. Unless Kyle killed Morales and Vasquez and gave my gun to Brian. But why would he do that? They weren't close, and my gun wasn't with Brian's guns. Don't mean he didn't have it somewhere else. I didn't search. Maybe Brian was with Kyle when he killed Paco and Diego, Jack mused. He shook his head immediately. No, I don't buy it. Last week, Brian still thought he had the Doyle job. He wouldn't have been desperate enough to get involved in his half-brother's illegal shit. Miner chewed the inside of his mouth. The button bothers me. Jack looked up from his computer screen. Why? Doesn't make sense it only has her print on it. You're right, it doesn't. You think someone is trying to frame her? Who would hate her that much? Well, most every woman in town hates her, but few have the stomach for four murders and arson. My money is on the Pedrosas. But why kill your own man if you're wanting to send a message to the local organization? Maybe they found out Diego was a DEA informant. Miner's phone vibrated in his pocket. He ignored it. But we think the Pedrosas planted him with the DEA. And why would the Pedrosas kill the one Doyle who isn't involved in drugs? To make their enemies have to live with it. Jack nodded, almost in agreement. I'm not ruling out the Pedrosas, but Matt and Amy's murders feels more personal. There was no sign of forced entry, so the killer either knew the garage code, which would mean family, or Matt had to let his killer in the house. Why would he let a cartel man in? No, it doesn't make sense. Of the four people without alibis Saturday night, which one would have access to Diego's gun? Your gun. Who wanted to set up a meeting with the Pedrosas? Michelle. Whose fingerprints were found at the scene? Michelle's. Miner clicked his tongue against his teeth. It's too pat, he mumbled. Why would she kill Matt? What's her motivation? Jealousy, resentment, daddy issues. Does Michelle Doyle strike you as a woman with daddy issues? Christ, yes. Classic daddy issues. Miner shook his head. Nope. Not buying it as motivation. Miner rested his hands on his holster. Matt left the neighborhood about 1. What if he drove by DI, saw some activity, and stopped to check on it? Jack's eyebrows raised. And confronted Michelle. And threatened to expose them. Miner felt a kernel of belief bloom in his chest. That I'd buy. So would I. Jack sat back and rested his ankle on his knee. Would a woman who vomited at the sight of gore have the stomach to blow two people's brains out? No, but she'd sure as hell tell someone else to do it. Kyle Grant. Or your brother. Jack remains silent. Have you called his alibi yet? Going to do it after this. You. Today. We'll compare notes. Go on. Your phone is about to buzz a hole in your pocket. Now you go fill in the blanks for the Doyles. But not too many. Jack fiddled with the piece of paper with his brother's alibi written on it, and thought back to 6 weeks earlier. Eddie showing up right as the drug war started, getting a job with Doyle Industries, agreeing with little encouragement to spy on Doyle, sneaking back into the yard Friday night, the phone ruse. But most importantly, the quality of information he'd given Jack. No superfluous details, succinct and to the point. Jack laughed as his memories and reality of the last 20 years shifted, then fell into place. He shook his head and dialed the number. Hello? Hey, asshole. Eddie? No, Tom, it's Jack. In the drawn-out pause, Jack imagined the internal calculations running through the mind of Tom Hunter, his old DEA counterpart, the agent who was supposed to be working with the York County Task Force. The son of a bitch who'd been running his brother as an undercover agent for years, probably, all the while working with Jack and making snide jabs about his loser, ex-con brother. Fucker. Jack, how'd you get this number? Eddie gave it as his Sunday alibi. Tony Hunt. Not very imaginative. I suppose you have to keep it simple. Now, don't be all bitter. You would have done exactly the same in my place. Jack clenched his jaw to keep from saying something he would regret. Tom chuckled. It's just as well. Your brother's burned out. He's the best agent we have. The one with the best cover. You mean me and my mother? Yeah. Came in handy quite a few times. Helping his brother get out of jail might have been good for Eddie's career, but had been a weakness in Jack's for years. Was he with you? Yeah, I can vouch for him. Starting when? He made contact with our dead drop about 2 a.m. Relief coursed through Jack. He'd never truly thought Eddie had killed Matt and Amy, but to have it confirmed was heartening. Where are you holding Kyle Grant? You figured it out. Don't act so surprised, jackass. Eddie said he dropped Kyle in Dallas and gave your number as his alibi. You're right. It's not rocket science. Fuck you. I want to talk to Grant. He wants to talk to you. Says he knows who killed Diego Vasquez. Jack shot up out of his chair. I'm leaving now. Fine. I'll meet you in Seagoville. You want to talk to Muldoon, too? Fred Muldoon? Yeah. Your brother didn't tell you he shot him. What? No. Good boy. I told him not to. Why? Old rivalries die hard. Bastard. I'll be there in 2 hours. I'll be waiting for you. Chapter 38. Miner felt like he was in a scene from The Godfather. Joe Doyle brooded behind his desk. Norman Davey leaned against the credenza, his eyes never leaving Michelle, who paced the office, phone against her ear. Chris sat on the couch near the door. Eddie's not answering. She stared at her phone. He's probably in the middle of Houston traffic. He'll call when he gets there. She glared at Miner. McBride seriously thinks I killed my brother?
Of the suspects, you're at the top of his list.
Who are the other suspects? Chris asked.
The other three people who don't have an alibi.
Michelle threw up her hands.
Who are?
There's a limit, Michelle.
She walked toward Miner.
Oh, really? How does your wife like her pain meds, huh?
because I can make sure she never gets another OxyContin in her life.
Do that, and I'll make sure Jack and Sheriff Newberry know everything I know about your little organization.
Little organization? You don't know shit.
Pollard told me more than you think.
Michelle laughed. Pollard thinks you're an idiot.
Sure you want to take that chance?
Enough, Joe said. Why does McBride like Michelle for this?
No one else has a motive, except Brian Grant.
What exactly is my motive?
Daddy issues.
Michelle's laughter was harsh. Are you fucking kidding me?
Daddy issues? Doyle said. That's what McBride is basing his case on?
Michelle turned to her father, a bit of the tension easing out of her. He's got nothing. When Eddie gets back, he'll confirm my alibi, and McBride will have to move on to someone else or have to look into his brother for it, which he won't do.
Did Eddie do it? Miner asked.
No, and neither did I, Michelle said.
Who are you with? Miner asked.
Michelle pursed her lips. With Eddie, like I said.
Why didn't you tell Jack the truth from the beginning?
Because I thought my husband would be my alibi.
Maybe next time give me a heads up on what lies I'm supposed to tell, Chris said.
Michelle rolled her eyes. Don't you have a golf game or something?
Already played. Chris stood. I'll get the kids to Matt and Amy's visitation. You obviously don't need me to plot world domination.
I don't need you for anything, Michelle mumbled. Chris walked out, seemingly oblivious.
Michelle, you've really fucked this all up.
Michelle rounded on her father, her face a mask of indignation. What? I haven't done anything.
Two dead Mexicans and Matt and Amy.
How are either my fault? I never had a meeting with the Pedrosas. It takes time for Kyle to go through his channels. It's not like I have them on fucking speed dial.
Watch your language, young woman.
Michelle clammed up, but her face turned beet red.
Where is Kyle? Doyle said.
He's dead, Michelle said. Doyle's expression was like granite.
How do you know?
When they were dealing with Muldoon, Kyle went after Eddie and Eddie killed him.
Did he?
I can't hear this, Davy said.
Then leave, Michelle shot back. You're fucking useless anyway.
Michelle!
Doyle roared. He stood and walked around the desk. He loomed over his daughter. Miner admired Michelle for not looking cowed, but he suspected the strength it took for her to stand toe-to-toe with Joe.
Did you see the body?
Her brows furrowed in confusion. Whose body? Kyle's?
Yes.
Doyle's derision-filled voice made Michelle flinch. No.
Then how do you know he's dead?
Doyle's eyes never left his daughter's.
Miner, do the feds have an undercover agent in our organization?
Yes.
Michelle's head twisted around to Miner.
Don't you think you should have told me that when I gave you the big fucking bag of pills?
Miner shrugged.
I'm telling you now.
Michelle lunged for Miner, but Doyle caught her.
Don't blame him for your incompetence.
Me?
You've been too busy spreading your legs for Eddie McBride to see who he really is.
That's not true.
Doyle still gripped Michelle's arms.
You even fucked him in my office, haven't you?
Michelle recoiled, but Doyle held her fast.
Where'd you do it? My chair? My desk?
You're hurting me.
You've always been a slut, just like your mother.
Michelle's head jerked back, as if slapped. Miner stepped forward.
Joe, that's enough. Eddie's not the narc.
Who is?
I honestly don't know. McBride doesn't even know.
Doyle pushed Michelle away from him. She stumbled back and turned her back to the men, wiping at her eyes.
You better find out tonight, Miner, or I'll go and take those pills from Teresa myself. and I'll make sure no doctor within 100 miles writes her a prescription for a fucking aspirin.
Composure regained, Michelle turned on her father.
You son of a bitch. I was setting up the truce with the Pedrosas for you. Get rid of McBride, crime goes down, you're the fucking town hero, and we grow our business without competition. Then your golden child caught us at the yard Saturday night and was oh so shocked his wonderful upstanding father would be involved in something so amoral.
The derision in Michelle's voice dripped from every word like syrup.
I didn't kill your pussy of a son, but I'm not sad he's dead.
Miner saw the blow and watched Michelle fall to the floor in slow motion. Davy knelt beside Michelle immediately. Miner was too stunned to speak, let alone move. Davy helped Michelle stand on shaky feet. She brushed him off roughly. Davy's face hardened, reddened, and he stepped next to Doyle, whose granite expression was tinged in red. Whether in anger or embarrassment, Miner wasn't sure. Michelle's chest heaved, and she touched the angry red welt rising on her cheek.
Y'all are ignoring the real problem, Miner said. McBride has evidence putting Michelle at the murder-arson crime scene.
That's as much bullshit as me killing my brother.
She glared at her father.
Maybe, but it's enough to get a warrant.
There's nothing to find.
You better hope not.
Doyle finally turned to Miner.
It doesn't matter, Doyle said. Because Miner will make whatever they find disappear. Won't you, Miner?
Miner thought of Teresa at home, pain-free for the first time in weeks. Of his promise to Jack that he would tell him everything the Doyles asked him to do, account for every cent they gave him. Lucky for Miner, Michelle paid him in pain pills. The answer rolled off his tongue easily.
Yes.
Chapter 39. Jack was being waved through security at the Federal Correctional Institution in Seagoville when his brother called.
Where are you? Jack said.
Bucky's parking lot on 45 with a load of DI drugs.
Get me some Bucky's balls, would you?
Sure.
Ask me where I am.
Where are you, Jack?
I'm pulling into Seagoville to talk to your two witnesses.
There was silence on the other end of the phone.
You still there, Eddie?
You aren't angry?
I'm furious. But Bucky's balls might keep me from kicking your ass.
You tried that a few days ago and lost.
Well, this time I'm on the side of righteousness.
Jack parked and cut the engine.
Honestly, I don't know whether to hate you or be proud of you.
I've hated myself enough for both of us, Eddie said.
Mom included?
Probably not.
When did it start?
The night you met Julie. Someone connected me with the son of the future lieutenant governor and brother of a law student. Recruiting you for the FBI was part of it, too.
The shot to Jack's ego was deep.
Nice to know our government has been manipulating us for 20 years.
Well, we've done a little good, so I can forgive them.
Eddie sighed.
God, what a weight off. You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you.
Does Mom know?
No.
Make sure I'm in the next state when she finds out.
Jack got out of his car and locked it. So, you were bringing Fred and Kyle to Dallas Sunday morning. Why the fuck didn't you bring them to me?
Michelle would have known you had Kyle Grant in custody. As it is, she thinks he's dead.
What?
Dude, it's a long story. Hey, I'm sending you an audio file. Use headphones. I've got to get on the road and you've got to do your shit and get back to meet Ellie at 10.
Where?
Her lake house. She'll think I'm meeting her, so be ready to have to convince her to stay. She is not happy with you.
She can get in line.
I've seen the error in my ways, nurse.
Have you, Fred?
The nurse squeezed the bulb of the blood pressure cuff.
I have. And it's all because of the attentions of a fine woman like you.
I'm married, Fred.
Fred's arm tingled from the tightening cuff.
I won't tell him if you won't.
The nurse released the valve.
Uh-huh.
She ripped the cuff off and stuffed it in the metal basket on the wall.
How's your pain? 1 being no pain at all, and 10 being excruciating.
6.
I notice you've eaten some.
She jerked her head toward the plate on the tray table.
The food here's terrible.
It's a prison, Fred.
I didn't do nothing wrong. Wrong place at the wrong time is all. Story of my life, if you want to know the truth.
Have you gone to the bathroom?
No, ma'am. But if you'd get me some whiskey, I imagine it'd go right through me.
I thought you'd seen the error in your ways.
The nurse smiled.
I have, and that's a fact. But whiskey is proven for medicinal purposes.
Maybe in the 19th century.
Someone knocked on the door, and it opened. Jack McBride stuck his head in. Is he decent, nurse?
As decent as he's ever gonna be. I'll check on you later, Fred.
I'll count down the minutes.
She rolled her eyes as she walked past Jack.
Well, well, look what the cat dragged in, Fred said.
Jack placed a box on Fred's tray table.
Those my shoes?
They are. I also brought you a honey bun. Jack pulled it from his pocket.
I told you my life was worth more than a honey bun.
You're still alive, aren't you?
No thanks to your brother.
Jack pulled up a chair and sat down. How are you feeling?
I've got a bullet hole in my shoulder.
So I see. Tell me what happened, from the beginning. Fred sighed. He'd already told the story to the fat Fed and didn't particularly want to tell it again. He was tired and his throat felt like sandpaper. Fred flipped the lid from the box and lifted out a shoe. The leather gleamed in the fluorescent hospital lights. The soles were smooth and thick. They looked brand new. Fred dropped the shoe back in the box and slapped the lid down. He cleared the lump from his throat and started.
I was just trying to get warm. It was cold Sunday morning, you know. They'd locked all the trucks in the yard, so I went around the buildings to try and find one open. I didn't, and I'd hunkered down by an AC unit when I heard all the commotion. Couldn't hear a whole lot through the walls, but I heard plenty when they were outside yelling at each other.
Who?
Michelle and Matt.
Sunday morning. You sure?
Considering your twin brother shot me that day, yeah, I'm sure.
What were they yelling at each other?
Something about Matt not believing what he was seeing. Michelle telling him to keep his mouth shut, or else.
Do you remember specifically what she said?
No. About that time, someone grabbed my shoulder, and I pissed myself. Not my finest moment.
Who?
That little shit-stain Grant. He's always been a little weasel. He frog-marched me into the truck barn, and there was Michelle and your brother conferring.
Where was Matt?
Didn't see him. Grant wanted to kill me right there, but Eddie talked them out of it. Make a big mess. Harder to get rid of a dead body than to drive a live one to his grave. Well, it was a mess of an argument, but Eddie won. Michelle, though, I could tell she didn't trust Eddie 100%, so she told Shitstain to go with us. I knew I was a goner for sure. We drove through Yorkville, and Eddie stopped at the Whataburger to get taquitos. Asked me if I wanted any. Last meal and all. I didn't, though now I wish I had. A taquito sure sounds good right now. Damn sight better than a honey bun.
I'll bring you some taquitos next time I come.
Eddie ordered the most fool thing you can imagine, and we drove on. Drove west all night, until we were in the middle of nowhere, somewhere south of San Angelo, I think. Finally stopped next to an oil well, then we started walking. By this time, Shitstain was pretty pissed off. Let's just kill the fucker and get back. Eddie told him, sure, okay, if we wanted the body to be found. Shitstain stopped to take a leak, and Eddie pushed me forward, told me to run and to fall when he shot me. Shot me, I said. Yeah, if you want to live, you've got to play dead. Go. So I ran, and the sumbitch shot me in the shoulder. Damn fine shot come to that. I fell and played dead, like he said. I heard some commotion. Don't know rightly what happened since I was playing possum. I'd have drifted off, not sure. Next thing I know, I hear a bunch of cars pull up, then leave. Then here comes your brother with a first aid kit and some water. Takes care of me right nice, apologizes for shooting me, and sends me along with some mouth-breathing fed. No offense, Chief.
None taken.
They bring me here and operate on me. And here I am.
So you heard Michelle threaten Matt?
I did.
This is important. What exactly did she say?
Jesus, Chief, I'm a 70-year-old alcoholic. I can't tell you anything exactly.
Fine. What do you remember?
Matt said something like, you wouldn't hurt me, and Michelle said, don't fucking count on it.
The chief stared at the shoebox as if it held the secrets of the universe.
What do you care about that? Aren't you investigating the one-armed soldier fire?
I guess you haven't heard. Matt and Amy Doyle were murdered early Sunday morning.
You don't say. And you think Michelle did it?
You know I can't tell you that.
Well, I bet you're barking up the wrong tree.
Why?
Once they decided to get rid of me, they were pretty free and easy with their conversation. Took a while for Michelle to calm down, but Eddie eventually got her settled. Encouraged her to have Joe talk to Matt, bring him around.
Jack stilled, as if holding his breath or his excitement. Did she call Joe while you were there?
Yep. She hung up and said her dad was going straight over.
Chapter 40. Kyle Grant. I gotta say, you rock the orange jumpsuit. Brings out the crazy in your eyes. Kyle leaned forward across the table and tried to grab at Jack, but his handcuffs stopped him. They rattled against the metal table.
Fuck you and your brother, McBride. These charges are bullshit. I didn't try to kill your brother, though if I saw him right now, I might.
His public defender put her hand on Kyle's arm.
Mr. Grant.
When Kyle sat back, the woman extended her hand to the federal prosecutor sitting next to Jack.
I'm Andrea Armstrong, Mr. Grant's attorney.
She was in her mid-30s at least, and didn't look harassed or beaten down by the system. Jack guessed she was starting her second career.
Tanya Porter, the prosecutor said, her West Texas drawl as thick as the day-old coffee in the styrofoam cups in front of them.
Jack had worked with Tanya many times. She was a by-the-book pit bull. He had done a mental fist pump when he saw her purposely striding down the hall to the interrogation room. Threatening to kill his best agent like that isn't the best way to endear you to Special Agent Hunter back there. Jack jerked his thumb at the glass behind him. Kyle sat back.
I told Michelle not to trust him, but she was too busy sucking his dick to listen to reason.
Really, Kyle? There are ladies in the room.
Don't mind me. I'm not easily offended, Andrea Armstrong said.
Jack didn't need to see Tanya roll her eyes to know she did it. Jack tilted his head. Or are you jealous? Michelle threw you over when my brother came to town. Kyle looked away. Bingo. You've been here before. You know how this works.
I know the feds lie. Promise you shit they never intend to give, then throw you to the wolves.
And that's not the way to ingratiate yourself to me, Tanya said.
Jack continued. As soon as Michelle and Joe Doyle hear you've been picked up, they're going to pretend they don't even know who you are. Norman Davey will twist things around so much, Ms. Armstrong won't know which way is up.
Don't count on it.
Jack heard the smirk in Andrea Armstrong's voice. You'll take the dive for everything we have on them, and they'll pin things we don't even know about on you.
I don't think you have anything on them.
Jack knew the only bluffs that ever worked were the big bluffs.
You do know this investigation isn't just me and County, right? The DEA and FBI were looking at Doyle way before I even heard of Stillwater. They've got wiretaps, informants up and down Texas and down to Mexico. Heard of Diego Vasquez? He sang a good song about Buck Pollard and Joe Doyle. They've got Doyle for a laundry list of stuff. I couldn't care less. Let the DEA and FBI follow the drugs and money. All I care about is solving four murders. And Agent Hunter said you can help me.
Here's the question, Mr. McBride. Why would Mr. Grant want to help you? Andrea Armstrong said.
Because if you don't, the Tex SS might hear you've been working with the Pedrozas. You're heading back inside for breaking parole. Kyle lost some of his bravado.
No one will believe you.
You were supposed to set up a meeting between the Pedrozas and Michelle, right? How exactly would you do that? Through Paco Morales? He hid Vasquez at the country club, didn't he? When did you put two and two together?
Who's Vasquez? Andrea asked.
Jack addressed the lawyer. Diego Vasquez is the Pedrozas' front man for York County. He beat me up and stole my gun my first day as chief. That was a bad day. He turned his attention back to Kyle. Did you contact Morales to set up the meet with Vasquez? Who went with you? Or were you alone? Kyle smirked at Jack. Jack knew Kyle had been in enough interrogation rooms to know they had nothing on him. Apparently, his lawyer realized it too.
I think we'll take our chances, she said.
Jack shrugged and rose. With what charge? Attempted murder against a federal agent?
I didn't try to kill him.
Kidnapping Fred Muldoon?
I wasn't kidnapping him.
Right. I meant conspiracy to murder. Then there are your parole violations, Eddie's testimony about your involvement in the Doyle drug organization. You're absolutely right. Taking your chances is the way to go. Andrea Armstrong leaned over to whisper into Kyle's ear. They conferred for a moment before Kyle nodded.
I didn't kill Diego Vasquez, but I know who did.
How do you know?
I was there.
Andrea Armstrong put her hand on Kyle's arm.
Nothing else until we talk deal.
Tanya took over.
He pleads guilty to assaulting a federal officer and he gets 5 years, minimum security, somewhere on the East Coast. Away from the Tex SS and the Pedrozas.
Kyle shook his head no.
6 months, Andrea Armstrong said.
The minimum sentence for all of his charges is 30 years. 5 years is a steal, Tanya said.
You're assuming I'd lose.
Tanya grinned like the cat that ate the canary. Obviously, Andrea Armstrong didn't know her opponent. Tanya hadn't lost a case since 1989.
She turned to Kyle.
Do you want to gamble 30 years of your life on a new lawyer?
Andrea Armstrong bristled, but Kyle shook his head.
2 years, Andrea Armstrong said. Minimum security.
Tanya narrowed her eyes and pursed her lips. Jack could tell she was disappointed at the lost opportunity to put Kyle Grant away for a long time. But she also knew how important it was to get Grant to talk.
Deal.
Tanya opened her briefcase.
Write it up, Andrea said, trying to take command. Then he'll talk.
Tanya paused and glared at Andrea Armstrong. She pulled out a legal pad and clicked the end of her pen, still glaring at the young lawyer. She shook her head, wrote down the outline of the deal, and signed it.
Sign this. We'll work up the official form while you talk to McBride.
Andrea Armstrong read the form, nodded to Kyle, who signed it. Tanya took the legal pad, tossed it in her briefcase, and left.
Who killed Diego Vasquez? Jack said.
Michelle killed Paco and Diego.
Michelle Doyle.
With your gun.
The gun Diego had. How did you get it from him?
I overpowered him.
It was only you and Michelle there meeting with Diego and Paco. No one else.
Nope.
Why did you meet in the one-armed soldier's house?
Huh?
Why there? Why not out in the country somewhere? There's plenty of run-down barns and old houses in York County. Why pick one on the edge of town?
Michelle wanted you to investigate it. Another example of you being incompetent.
Why burn the place down? We would have ID'd Diego much sooner if he hadn't been burned.
That was an accident. I tossed a cigarette and the place went up like a tinderbox.
What happened to the gun?
Diego's? When I told her it might be yours, she kept it. As a souvenir.
Minor. Case meeting with everyone tonight at 8 p.m. Order in from Mabel's. It's going to be a long night. Jack closed out the text app as Tom Hunter walked down the hall toward him.
You may keep your job after all, Hunter said.
When Jack glared at him, Hunter said,
Eddie mentioned you were under some pressure out there.
You could say that.
You like it? Small town living?
Jack thought of Ellie, of Ethan settling in and making friends, and of all the nice people he'd met in the last 2 months. They far outweighed the Doyles of the world.
Yeah, I do.
Good. Glad you're happy.
Jack wouldn't have exactly used that word, but let it slide.
You haven't let Grant make a call, have you?
I'm not a fucking amateur, McBride.
Uh-huh. You ready to search DI?
Hunter nodded.
Yep. Your ex-partner is working on a warrant for their financials.
Alex is working this case.
Yep. Ask to be put on it. Probably hoping to run into you. You two had a thing going, didn't you?
No.
Uh-huh. I've got a warrant being delivered to a federal judge right now to search DI's businesses. First thing in the morning. When's the funeral?
Tomorrow at 3 p.m.
Hunter nodded appreciatively.
They won't know what hit 'em.
Chapter 41.
Deciding against decorations was the best decision I've made in 2 months. The book bank was officially closed for Ellie's post-election victory party, but since there was nothing to celebrate and no decorations, it looked like any other Tuesday evening, and thank God. Paige worked behind the counter, serving those few people who wanted a snickerdoodle latte instead of the free tea or cokes on the display table that usually held Christian fiction, Amish mysteries, and devotionals, which had been wiped out Sunday afternoon.
It's a testament to how much people like you that they're buying stuff instead of taking the free, Kelly said.
Ellie drank the dregs of a Diet Coke from a red Solo cup. The ice crinkled when she set it down.
I should have opened a bar. You might have won if you had,
Ellie's lips fluttered when she sighed. I didn't want it anyway. Liar. I am a liar. Ellie stood. But not about that. Once we get rid of everyone, I need to talk to you. Sure. Are we going to need wine for this conversation? You might. I have some upstairs. Oh, good Lord, Kelly said. What? Here comes Julie McBride. Ellie turned and saw Julie and Ethan walk through the door. Her stomach clenched. She hadn't seen Ethan since the September night he caught her and Jack kissing in the book bank office. The horrified expression on Ethan's face had been what Ellie thought of when Jack told her his wife returned.